Folks, we've heard some jaw-dropping stories on the show before, but sometimes the stories our own minds tell us can be the most jaw-dropping of all. If you've ever been caught off guard by disturbing, unwanted thoughts, you might know what we mean. When something violent or taboo or embarrassing bursts into your mind, it can leave you reeling and wondering, what is that thought say about me? Well, that happens to almost everyone, but for people with obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, they tend to cause a lot of distress and feel impossible to stop thinking about. A good friend of mine has OCD, so I've witnessed this struggle up close, and it's taught me a lot about how serious and misunderstood the condition is. People think OCD is only about hand washing or organization. OCD can latch onto anything, but it often focuses on the things we care about most. In an attempt to make the distress from their unwanted thoughts go away, people with OCD will often engage in repetitive physical or mental behaviors, known as compulsions, which can be incredibly time-consuming and exhausting. OCD is highly treatable, but it needs specialized treatment. NoCD is a virtual therapy provider for OCD that makes getting specialized therapy easier than ever. With NoCD, you can do live, face-to-face video therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in OCD. Exposure and response prevention, or ERP, a type of therapy that was designed specifically to treat OCD, is considered the gold standard treatment, and that's available through NoCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans and offers always-on support between sessions. If you think you might be struggling with OCD and want to learn more about therapy with NoCD, go to NoCD.com and schedule a free 15-minute call with their team. That's NoCD.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call.
Shop with Rakuten and you'll get it. What's it? It's the best deal. Great cashback rates and more savings on your shopping. When you join Rakuten, you'll get cashback at brands like Marks & Spencer, Mango and Selfridge. Even when you shop the sales, just start your shopping with Rakuten to save money at over 400 brands. Join for free at rakuten.co.uk or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Hey folks, this is Kevin. This is an unusual episode you're about to hear. Let me explain. In 2021, our team at Risk began to create a different podcast series, a series we called Real. Over the years, we've noticed many people are hesitant to listen to Risk for fear that an episode might contain something violent or sexually graphic or just dark. So we figured that if we created a series that's safe to listen to, even if your kids are within earshot, that might be nice. So the 5 episodes of Real that we completed in 2021 consist of stories that were originally shared on Risk, but with curse words or anything else too risky removed. You'll notice all the music on the show was created by our own John LaSala. And the controlling idea of the Real podcast is that listening to stories and sharing stories is good for your mental health. In 2021, we were all really feeling the need for a lot of healthy self-care. So we hoped the Real podcast would speak to people in that way. Now, for various reasons, we stopped making episodes of the Real podcast after we'd completed 5 episodes. But seeing as how Thursdays we rerun old material here anyway, here's something old and new. We're running all 5 episodes of Real here in the Risk feed before the year's over, and we'd love to hear your reactions. So, without further ado, here is the 5th and final episode of Real. It's one we call Real Embarrassment.
Oh my God, this is my chance. Time to be a hero.
So now, all of my fear has immediately turned to embarrassment.
This can't be real.
Oh, it's real.
It felt real.
Are you for real?
I don't even know what real is.
A real dog sound.
Real world.
Are you for real?
The real deal.
For real.
And
This is real.
This is Real. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is the podcast of true stories for everyone. Recently, I saw a friend I hadn't seen in years, but it didn't seem that long because I was always seeing his photos online. Beautiful family, beautiful home. His social media made me envious. I don't feel like I have a picture-perfect life. But when we talked, he told me stories about medical problems in his family, mental health issues, how he was struggling to keep his marriage. I walked away that night feeling, well, less alone in my own struggles and feeling grateful that people share about their lives with much more nuance when they're just honestly sharing stories like this one. And this is a real nail biter of a story from Summer Gilmore. You can hear how she was trying to keep up appearances with her neighbors till things got real. Here's Summer now with a story we call Missing.
It is the summer of 2005, and I'm living in Iowa with my husband and our 3 kids. Now in Iowa, the summers can get really hot and humid, and we have a great big house without any central air. So on really hot nights, we would let our kids come and sleep in our room since we were the only room in the whole house that had a window air conditioner unit. And this was one of those nights. So we bring all the kids upstairs, we make a little bed on the floor, we put a movie on, and then we all just go to bed. And around midnight, I wake up to my husband nudging me awake. Summer, where's the baby? The baby's 2. She's on the floor. And I roll over and I go back to sleep. And he's nudging me again more aggressively. Summer, where is the baby? She's on the floor. No, she's not. She's not on the floor. So I get up and I go over to the bed on the floor and I'm kind of moving the blankets around and I'm waking up my other 2 kids and she's not there. She's not on the floor. And the kids are waking up and we're looking in all of the usual places. I mean, she's 2. Did she go back to her bed? Did she get something to drink? Did she go to the bathroom? And she is none of these places. So now we're starting to open bathroom cupboards and we're looking under the beds. And I start to walk down the stairs. And I get downstairs and the first thing that hits me is that my front door is wide open. And my dogs are sitting on my living room floor. And these are not the types of dogs that don't bark when someone comes in, and these are not the types of dogs that will just sit on my living room floor, so something isn't right. And my husband brings the kids downstairs, and he gets them a snack and sits them on the couch, and he's trying to keep them calm, and I go outside, and I call her name a few times. And if you have kids and you've ever lost them in a park or in a mall, you know that moment when you don't see them right away. You're trying to fight that away. They're not missing. You're going to find them any second now. Any second now. Should I, you know, are they really missing? And that panic just kind of cycles through your head, and it's starting to creep in a little bit, and I'm still pushing it away. We have these neighbors that I don't think like us, and I don't really have any reason to believe they don't like us other than the fact that they won't ever wave at me from the driveway. They've never let my kids come over to play. And they happen to be having a party right now that we weren't invited to. But they're up, and so I go over there, and I'm really nervous because I have to go over to this house of people that I don't think like me and tell them that it is midnight and I can't find my 2-year-old. And they're a little concerned, but they haven't seen anything and they haven't heard anything. And I walk back home and I tell my husband they haven't seen her. And I tell him that it's probably time to call 911. It's been about 15 minutes since he first woke me up to tell me that she's missing. And I was doing okay until the dispatcher asked me to describe what she's wearing. She's 2. She has blonde hair, and she is wearing Tinkerbell pajamas. And I just fell apart. My husband somehow is remaining completely calm through all of this, and he's telling the kids that everything's going to be okay. I live in the type of town where a lot of people have CB radio, so I have people coming to my house now before the police are even there, and they have dogs and they have flashlights. And I have to describe to you the distinction for me. Up until this point, I didn't know where my daughter was. But these people showing up at my house with their dogs and their flashlights are joining an investigation of a missing child that I didn't realize had begun, and a line has been crossed. People are asking me questions. Do you know anybody? Would she go anywhere? Did you hear anything? Did your dogs bark? And they're going into my house, and they're sitting with my kids, and they're asking my kids questions. And I'm not even sure that everybody is speaking English because everything is just spinning, and it's happening really, really fast, and I don't know what's going on. And now the police are coming. The police have much more specific questions. And I remember them asking me if we knew anybody that could have taken her. My husband and I look at each other because we did know somebody that we were close to, and everybody in our family had heard the rumors of what he was supposed to have done. And I can't tell you why we didn't say anything to the police right then, other than we weren't ready to go there because she was okay and we were going to find her and nobody had taken her. We are all in the front yard and we have an above ground pool. And of course, I had thought about the above ground pool because I have a 2-year-old and an above ground pool and she is missing. And the police are walking to our backyard and my husband is following and I'm behind him. And my feet just stop. I can't walk anymore. And I just start shouting his name, Shane! 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 And he turns around and he says, what? I said, just don't tell me. And it felt like 1,000 years before he got to the pool. And I waited. And he said, she's not in here. And then my legs quit working and I just collapsed. Because as much as I didn't want her to be in there, it meant that she was still missing. And now they're coming and telling me that it's time to put my dogs up because the canine unit is coming and they need to search my house. And this is very real and this is happening right now. And all of these people are trying to help me find my 2-year-old. And she's been missing now for about 45 minutes. The dogs and their handlers come and they're asking me to find the last outfit that she wore. And I'm looking in the laundry room and I don't understand. And my husband's shouting at me, aren't her clothes in the bathroom? And I don't understand what anybody wants from me. And I don't know what they're doing. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And my husband finds the clothes and they smell them. And they're searching the house and they leave. And I don't know where I'm supposed to go. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know how to look for her. My feet don't work. And so I go back outside. And it's been over an hour now, and my 2-year-old in her Tinkerbell pajamas is missing in the middle of the night. I am starting to ask myself some really tough questions. Why didn't my dogs bark? Was it someone that they knew? Did she call for me? Is she okay? Would I innately know if she was still alive? And I don't really know when it happened, but at some point I must have been on the ground and pulled myself into a fetal position. I'm just rocking and I'm calling her name and I'm wailing her name and I am just lost. The daughter of our neighbors, 13-year-old girl, the neighbors who I don't think like me, she has her arm around me and she doesn't know what to say. She doesn't know what to do because she's 13 and I'm pretty hysterical. And we're just rocking together in my front yard while I scream my baby's name. About an hour and a half after she's been missing, a car comes up and I am told that this is the chief of police. And I don't know why he's there. I want to know what he knows, why he's now come to my house an hour and a half after my daughter has gone missing. And I'm trying not to listen too much because he might be saying something that I don't want to hear. And he goes right into my house. And before I know it, my husband is calling for me upstairs. They found her, they found her. And I am up and I'm running through the house and I go up the stairs because he called from our room. And standing there is the chief of police holding my daughter wrapped in a blanket. And my first thought is that she wasn't alive. And I pull her from him and I'm pulling the blanket from her face and she is hot and she is sweaty, but she is very much alive. And tears are pouring down my face because I don't know where she was. I don't know who found her. I don't know how she got here. And my husband is just laughing. And the chief of police is just laughing. And I don't understand any of this. And they tell me that 2 weeks earlier, the chief of police and his wife woke up to find their 4-year-old missing. He had wrapped himself in a blanket and gotten wedged between the mattress and the footboard of their bed. And so when he heard about my little girl, he came right to the house, and that's the first place that he looked. So now, all of my fear has immediately turned to embarrassment. I have half of my town out looking for a child who never left her parents' bed. My husband goes outside and he lets everyone know that she's okay. We will have answers tomorrow and we would like some privacy tonight. So in the morning, I tell my kids that we've got some cookies to bake. And my 11-year-old, why? Why are we making cookies? They didn't do anything. Nobody found her. She never left. You know, not one person hesitated, and people that we didn't know and people that we don't think like us came over, and everybody was there and everybody helped. So we baked cookies and we went door to door on our block. There was no way for me to know all of the people that were there that night. And we walked door to door on our street and I both thanked and apologized everyone that came out that night. And the craziest thing was, I honestly believed that they were going to be angry at me. Angry for pulling them out of their homes in the middle of the night, for scaring them, for taking up their time. And you know what? Not one person was mad. I still don't think the neighbors liked us, though.
Things are looking good for Summer Gilmore and her family these days. And I don't just mean on social media. We'll be right back after this short break.
Shop with Rakuten and you'll get it. What's it? It's the best deal. Great cashback rates and more savings on your shopping. When you join Rakuten, you'll get cashback at brands like Marks & Spencer, Mango and Selfridge. Even when you shop the sales, just start your shopping with Rakuten to save money at over 400 brands. Join for free at Rakuten.co.uk or get the Rakuten app. That's RAKUTEN.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
And we're back. One of my family's favorite stories is about the time me, my mom, and dad went to a crowded restaurant, and people seemed uptight in this place, so we were on our best behavior. Then my dad was trying to get his sweatshirt off, but he pulled the t-shirt underneath over his head along with the sweatshirt, so he was exposing his big bare belly. Then he had both shirts tangled around his head so he couldn't see the people staring. And that's when his pants fell off. There he was in his underwear. When he realized how bad it looked, he pulled himself back together and sat right down like nothing had happened. Well, folks were giving us the stink eye. But I started to laugh. And soon Mom started to laugh. And even Dad started to laugh. Stories about moments of embarrassment make us feel all the more human. You know, that's why I thought it would be fun to share this next story by Sam Mullins. Now, the audio quality on this one is a little rough, but the humor still comes through. Here's Sam now with a story we call Get Cool Fast.
So, Stesha was my best friend in the entire world. We were born in the same month of the same year in the same hospital, and our mothers were best friends. So from the time we were very little, it was just me and Stesha. Like, you know those bathtub pictures that parents take where it's like it's getting close to bedtime and they throw all the kids that are roughly the same age in the tub at the same time to save time and water. It was always me and Stesha in the tub. We were best friends. But one day when we were about 11, Stesha came up to me and she told me that her family's house was for sale and that they were moving to Hawaii permanently. I was completely devastated. I couldn't even imagine what life would be like without Stesha and her freckly little face, you know? All of the pictures from when we were little, it was just me with my knobby arm around her and her buck teeth, like, and just like that, she was gone. So that first year that she was gone, we only talked a few times when our families would call each other on special occasions, and we'd like pass the phone around, everyone would talk to everyone, and Stesha and I would have a quick little awkward conversation. I say awkward because we were getting to be that age, you know, where suddenly if your best friend's a girl, it kind of enters into this strange like sexual context where your genders kind of get in the way of you just being best friends, you know? Like, you're a young man and a young woman, and talking's a little bit difficult. So, like, I got used to life without her, and a couple of years later, before I knew it, it was the summer that I turned 13, aka the summer before high school, which is a really big summer, because if you think about it, you need to prepare yourself to go from a building with finger paintings on the walls to go into a new building with like anti-drug ads, and there's like condom dispensers in the bathrooms, and when you're sitting in the classroom looking out the window instead of the familiar jungle gym with a slide, there's four guys wearing bandanas hotboxing an Acura Integra. So My plan for the summer was pretty clear. I needed to get cool fast. I want to wear the right things, to think the right things, to do the right things. Like, I wasn't even concerned about having my own unique style. Like, that first year, I just wanted to walk in already the epitome of what a high school boy was. Like, I wanted to shed my elementary school self. So I went out and I bought a skateboard, and I was really bad at it, so I just carried it around with me everywhere. It was more of an accessory than anything. And I started listening to some new music, and I learned all the words to the Limp Bizkit song Nookie before I even knew what a nookie was. And I got my first shaving razor, and to shave off my lifetime's accumulation of facial hair, which was about a millimeter of white blonde hair that was invisible to the naked eye, you know, get cleaned up. And I was doing push-ups and sit-ups and learning some guitar, and I was learning how to handle my voice cracking. You know, the secret to not having your changing voice crack is to just not be excited or enthusiastic about anything ever. You know, I needed to learn how to play it cool so that I'd be ready to talk to girls, pardon me, to talk to women. So it was in the middle of this get cool fast regimen when one day my mom burst in and she's like, "Hey, Stesha's on the phone, pick it up." So I pick it up and Stesha's like, "Hey, Sammy, guess what? I'm coming to Vernon this summer to visit for a few weeks, and I'm actually going to be in town for my birthday. And I was wondering, since I don't have a house in Vernon anymore, and since you live on the lake, I was thinking maybe I could have my birthday party at your house." And my mind was reeling. This was perfect. Because the best part of having a girl for best friend is the birthday parties. Like, at every one of Stesha's birthday parties growing up, I was always the only guy. And I used to act like it was a drag, but it was the best. It was wonderful. So now Stesha's asking me if I wouldn't mind if she brings her 20 beautiful friends over to my... Her beautiful French immersion friends, which, in Vernon, that's as exotic as it gets. So they're going to come over and put on their bathing suits and swim at my house? And I don't have to lift a finger? This was perfect to me, and this whole birthday would serve as like a test at the end of the summer where I can prove to myself that I am cool and I am ready to talk to girls. The stars were aligning. So it's the day of the party and all the pretty girls are showing up and everything's going great. You know, I'm playing a burnt CD I just burnt on my new CD burner. It was like all the coolest music I could think of. It was mostly just Blink-182. And we were all like swimming in the lake and eating barbecue, and I was like talking to the girls and catching up with Stesha, and I was doing my best to sit in like a semi-reclined position with the sun hitting me at the right angle to accentuate my abdominal muscles. Because even before I went to theater school, I knew the importance of good lighting. It's like a little bit later on, and all the girls are out on the dock, and they're all laying in the sun, and two of them are at the end of the dock, and they're hitting a volleyball back and forth, and they hit the ball into the water, and they're all like, "Oh, I don't want to go in the lake. I'm all warm and dry now." And I'm like, "Oh my God, this is my chance. Time to be a hero." So I stand up, and I'm like, "I'll get that for you." And I like dramatically take off my sunglasses. And my plan was not to merely just hop in the water and retrieve the ball. No, no, no. My plan was to run, to sprint as fast as I can and jump as far as I can. Because even at that age, I knew that that's what women really want. Is someone that can run and jump far. Right, girls? So I took off, and I'm running down the center of the dock, and there's girls on both sides, and everyone's watching me. And I might as well have had a cape on. I felt like such a hero. I'm running down the dock, and with a few feet of dock left, trouble. Because we were swimming for a couple of hours, so the top of the surface of the dock was really wet and slippery. And I slipped, and I hit the deck, literally. But I had enough momentum from my heroic sprint that I was now sliding on the surface of the dock. Now, had I just slid off the edge and into the water, it would have been totally fine. I would have been like, psh, that didn't even hurt. I'm gonna go and get the ball now. But that isn't what happened, because there was a nail up. And the nail cut me from here to about here. And about here, it caught onto my bathing suit. Now, had the bathing suit ripped and then I fell in, it would have been okay. Or even if it fully caught my suit and it ejected me from the suit nakedly into the lake, I truly believe that I could have brought it back. And it would have been okay. I would have been like, wow, what a freak accident. Could you pass me my trunks? I'm gonna go and get the ball now. But that isn't what happened. Because the good people at Quiksilver make too fine a product. And my trunks didn't rip. So what happened was, I went over the edge, and I swung, and I hit my head on the pillar, and my legs were straight up in the air, like kicking like mad, and I'm splashing around, my head is half underwater, and my penis is out. Side note! Side note, George Costanza was in the pool. I was in the lake. So I'm upside down and I think I'm drowning and I don't know what's happening. I'm in fight or flight. I'm splashing. And what does one do when you're in what you perceive to be a life and death situation? What happened next, I have to give to you secondhand, because I was underwater. But legend has it that my mom was inside making a potato salad. And she heard me calling for help. And she snapped into action, and she knocked this green sliding door off the track, and she was hurtling over lawn furniture and weaving through girls. And she got to me, and she pulled me to safety in a matter of seconds. And I was so confused. I was like, what the f-? And I'll always remember, my mom whispered in my ear, honey, quit cursing. And I'm like covered in blood and I'm shaking. And I remember I looked out at the lake and I could see the ball. And it was long gone. It was floating away. But the movie Castaway hadn't come out yet, so I couldn't even redeem myself with a well-timed Wilson joke. So I turn my attention to the girls, and all of them are half-heartedly trying to conceal their laughter. And I thought to myself, high school is going to be the best. Thank you.
Sam Mullins has shared so many hilarious stories about embarrassment that I asked him what those kinds of stories do for him.
When I'm trying to figure out which story I should try writing next, I always ask myself, what is something I'm still not over? embarrassment and shame are sort of this bottled up energy in your heart and mind and body. And if you can find a way to release that energy that brings an audience joy or connection, like, what's a more pure release than that? I remember coming off stage the first few times I told this story and being like, this thing that has haunted me for years is now my favorite thing to tell people about? How did that happen? It's got to the point where when I have an embarrassing moment now, I'm like, yes, this will be good. One day I will email Kevin Allison about this.
And there's nothing that I and my whole team love more than to get emails just like that. Or send us your thoughts on any of the stories we've shared. You can even send us a recording. Everything you need to know is right there on our website, realpodofficial.com. And there's more to come. Next time on the podcast, we'll hear from Rachel Rosenthal and David Crabb.
My 39-year-old grown-ass mother sat next to me in her little beige Chevette and filled the driver's seat with her own urine. And that was when I knew, I'm gonna make people laugh.
Discovering yourself and discovering someone else on the next episode of Real. Real is brought to you by the same folks who produce the podcast Risk. But every now and then, that show includes stories that are not safe for work, as they say. Real is not a kid's show, but it's pretty safe to play if your kids are in earshot. That's why we say Real is true stories for everyone. So spread the word to everyone. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, we're at RealPodOfficial. Special thanks on this episode to our storytellers, of course, and to our producer, composer, and audio editor, John LaSala. And once again, to you. So remember, listen, share, and be real.